two questions from the debate. Here you are, my first question. Hey Asha, my friend who is attending jhana, she can enjoy 8 hours of meditation, sitting up, spacing out, feeling okay. That's good, but it could be something else. Talk about an hour half in the past, physically occurs, a guide to meditation further. Now that is very dodgy. How she felt cuckoo, man, this is possible, grandmother Sutra, thank you. They ask for consciousness. No. The people have a house from the past. Once they pass away, they're gone forever. They can't just suddenly reappear. They're not being stored somewhere, just waiting to come out. The only people who can visit are what's called the Anakam. It's not everyone deserves. Once you're out, fully enlightened, there's nothing left to propel you further. The world is gone. Sankaras is just about stopped. Certainly the sankaras, the volitional formations which send you from one life to another, they're all stopped, finished. The whole point of becoming enlightened is not coming back again. Here they are coming back again. There is something very, very wrong there. So seeing the rest is wonderful. 8 hours of meditation, remember, Ajahn Chah used to say, chickens can sit longer than 8 hours. So it is a little bit touchy. The problem is that if you go and tell people like that, they say, no, you don't understand. But Ajahn Prabhu doesn't understand. Another one says, oh yes, I can understand. He understands. So people get very protective of these sorts of attainments. And it's very difficult to convince them that they haven't got the attainment. They start thinking that the arahats come from the past. These are just visions, images. They're not real. They're made up. So be very, very careful. One of the reasons why, as a Marco, now you don't talk to us about these things. It just encourages other people to start making something. So, basically, there are no such things as other hearts coming from our past, this genuine. What is the karmic cause for anxiety, depression, and other mental illnesses? It's usually the karmic cause in this life. The karmic cause in this life is stress, drive too hard, and not being resilient, because in this particular life, in our current age, we all have to work very, very hard to survive, to get by, to be successful. And because we all have to work so hard, even I have to work hard. In the old days, monks never need to work as hard as I do. They just would give a talk in their monastery. They didn't need to talk about people's monastery travel all over the world. But I don't mind that. I'm very resilient, very strong. But some people do not have that strength. And after a while, they get tired, very weak. And it's the depression, it's the tiredness, the dullness, the lack of energy. When I first went to visit my family in London, because it was a tradition where I grew up, that you go and visit family at Christmas time. Here in Blazers, Chinese New Year, you will go visit your family. So given the first chance, I went to visit my family in London in December. A long time to go to a place like London. Not so much cold, but so grey and dark. The midwinter is around December the 20th or 23rd or something. And that is the sun hardly rises above the horizon. It's only about 3 or 4 hours of daylight and the rest is dark. And the weather gets cold, but it doesn't like snow like in Norway, or it doesn't rain like in the rains, but it rains and it rains here. In London, It's sort of half rain, it's half dry. It's called drizzle, which is one of those words, which if I mention the word drizzle, makes you depressed. It's grey. Hardly any sun at all. And that's where they diagnosed, and I was told this when I went there, they diagnosed many people with a type of depression, which, they gave a very apt acronym, Seasonal Affective Disorder, SAD, sad. And to cure that depression at that particular time of the year, which hit many people, the main therapy was taking them into a brightly lit room. Very bright, not like outside, which is grey, dark. Brightly lit room. They made everyone wear Hawaiian shirts. It was a really bright colour. The wall was covered with bright paintings. And they had any sort of vibrant music. Everything was exaggerated in colour, in sound, just to get people alive again. And when their senses were stimulated, bright lights, white shirts, bright colours, bright sounds, and they came out of their seasonal affective disorder. That's how they got rid of their depressions. All it was, it's just dull. And that just makes it stop. The same as if on this retreat, I was boring monk. They went, on, on, on! And all you did was sit here, this is the four noble truths, dependent iteration and happy karma. And you go to the restaurant, it was delicious food, because I'm trying to torture you all just rice and simple curry, that's all, every day. Then after a while, you will get depressed as well. There's nothing to fight, nothing to look forward to, nothing to enjoy. That's one of the reasons why, just being a very sort of bright, ugly monk, just being able to do sadhus, make things powerful, that actually takes away a lot of energy, depression, and negativity. Just doing that much. So we can see that a lot of depression does actually come from a lack of energy, a lack of inspiration, because many of you are just too tired. One of the best ways to overcome depression will be to go into a nice, easy place, nothing much to ask you, really delicious food. Bright lights, Hawaiian dances, every evening, the morning, at lunchtime, whatever. Just to stimulate you, get the senses going again. Turn yourself on again. And then the depression actually lifts. Depression is just low energy. Mostly. Of course, there are other reasons for depression. Some chemical imbalances. Those can be very, very deep depressions. But for most depressions, it's just tiredness and negativity. The negativity just eats at you, eats at you, eats at you. And so you can only see two fabrics of the morning. You just cannot see any beauty in the morning. So that's where it comes from. And it's amazing, when you do have such low energy, again, you feel very vulnerable and very anxious. It's amazing how those two go together. They're negative. So even the people around you, you don't trust. Even life, you don't trust. The future is so frightening. When all you see is what's wrong in the world, what's wrong with other people, what's wrong with yourself. Just negativity and low energy. So that's where most of this comes. It's not past karma. It's just one of the diseases of our modern world. And we've lost this great positive attitude, which we used to have. Can meditation help a bipolar person? Look, there is no such thing as a bipolar person. There is a person who sometimes exhibits bipolar symptoms. They are not a bipolar person. But unfortunately, many of you, or your friends, have got to see a psychologist. And the first thing a psychologist has to do is label you. Just like a Vipassana. Give you a label, find out, they give you a test. And you do all this stuff, and aha! 10 out of 12, that means bipolar. And that is just so unfair. Because you may just be thinking that way, it's just so arbitrary. And obviously, the good psychologists will see you again and again and again. But they want to put you in a box. Because once you're in a box, then they can look up what the medication is supposed to be. So that's a lot of times psychologists have to box people and tell them what they are. The problem is that once they tell you what you are, that is what you become. They create the five qualities. They're just a person with bipolar symptoms sometimes. The experience which showed me this proved it to me. It was a very chilling experiment done in education in the UK many years ago. It must be about 50 years ago now they did this experiment. I did write about it in my first book, Open the Door of Your Heart, which is a very, very powerful piece of psychology. So this particular experiment, they had two classes, maybe about 13, 14 year olds, a couple of years in their O levels. It wasn't so much a crucial year. So two psychologists chose the school and had got permission from the principal to do this experiment. At the end of the year, there's two classes in the same year. At the end of the year, they used to give them an examination. And then grade them. The top part would go in class A, the next year, the bottom class would go in class B. You know, you can do that in Malaysia schools, maybe. At least they used to do that in the past. But this year, the two psychologists and the principal decided not to publish the results, the year-end test, but just divide the two kids into the two classes. And they went to extra special trouble to split them equally. The child who came top went in the same class as the children who came about fourth and fifth, eighth and ninth, 12th and 13th, 16th and 17th. The children who came second and third went to the same class as the ones who came sixth and seventh, 10th and 10th, 14th and 15th. They split them equally, as best they possibly can. And they also chose teachers, their teachers for that class, without telling them that they were splitting in the equal abilities, as best they could find. They count teachers, same experience, equally well respected. They chose classrooms with equal facilities, equal lights. They tried to make everything as equal as possible between those two classes in the same year, except for one thing. They just arbitrarily, just tossing a coin, called one of those classes Class A, and the other one Class B. So half the children were so pleased. Oh, I'm in Class A next year. Some of their parents were so surprised. You've hardly done any work all year. You're in Class A. Well done, son. That's an extra pocket money. And other kids who went into Class B, no more privileges for you. You're staying home and doing your homework. You're getting extra tuition. You're in Class B this year. Even though they were exactly the same level, people assumed Class A for the top half, Class B for the bottom. Children believed that, so they behaved accordingly. The teachers who taught every day in those classes, they always expected more out of the Class A class, taught at a higher level. The teachers in Class B didn't expect so much. So you can imagine what happened 1 year later. 1 year later, when they gave the end of the year exam, the children in Class A did so much better the notes in Class B, even though they're exactly the same ability the year before. The Class A children became Class A children. The Class B kids became Class B. That is why, if you call someone bipolar, and they believe it, whether they were or they weren't, they now become bipolar. That is the psychology. Lately. When you're at school, someone called you stupid. Maybe you believe that. You become one of the monks I obeyed. That's what happened to him. I won't say who it is. He was a migrant from Vietnam. His parents fled during the Vietnam War. And he was at school in Australia, growing up, and one day, one month, he didn't do well at school, and his grandfather took him aside. He was only maybe 6 or 7, and said, you're a stupid boy. He told me this, and that really affected him. From the grandfather, the person who's the head of the family, which everyone respects him, says he was stupid, and this young man believed it. And so he never tried at school. He didn't do very well at school. He became a chef. And when he became a monk, I was surprised. Hey, how come you didn't finish school? Well, brilliant. He did amazing carpentry work and learning Pali, Vinaya. He should be at university. What do you mean you haven't been to school? And talking to him, he said, because I'm stupid. He said, no, you're not. I've been watching you. I've been living with you. You're an incredibly smart young man. And that's what he told me. His grandfather called him stupid. He believed it. And he acted stupid. It's amazing. Be very careful about what people tell you. If you've got a stupid husband, it's only because you called him so many times. You've got what he deserved. I actually practice this. I always build people up. Many of you, in may have noticed you come into the interview room, so I'm using my tele meditation. It's very good, well done. How many of you have ever noticed me criticizing you? Telling you bad attendance. You weren't out of time. So bad cook, bad recorder. Have I ever done that? And I tell you that for purpose. Because I know that if I criticize, I make you worse. If I praise, I make you better. This is great psychology. Amazing. So, I told the person, no way. You're a person who sometimes acts like a bipolar. Whatever that is. It's usually sometimes you have great mood. Sometimes you really dull, depressed. So am I. So are you. Everybody has their good days and bad days. But sometimes they're really bad. And so, oh, that's why I call them. Yeah, so you know those days when everything goes wrong? You get up in the morning, you're late for meditation, you bang your head on the door, spill the coffee, you get fined when the policeman sort of fined you for speeding. Every day you got away with it. Why today? Your boss, for once, is early, so catches you coming late. Ah, someday you're like that. Right forward! So, first of all, don't believe that. Even schizophrenia. It's really heavy. Is it? Is there any such thing as a schizophrenic person? For years I've been saying, no way. It's a person who sometimes exhibits the symptoms of schizophrenia. They're not a schizophrenic person. There's much more to them than that. And once, not how many years ago now, I scored an invitation to go to Singapore to give an address at the Woodland Institute of Mental Health. Now in Woodlands in Boston, it was a big institute. Every mental health disease was actually treated at that institute. And being Singapore, they were turning it into a hub. A mental health hub. China, Malaysia, now get some money out of you guys. So anyway, they wanted me to come for this conference because I was well respected, and when I went there, I gave my talk, and after my talk, this gentleman came up and said, I'm not a Buddhist, I'm a Catholic, and I want you to come and dress my unit. I was very impressed with that. He said, yeah, sure. what unit in this big institute for mental health do you have? He said, the schizophrenia unit. And I said, how do you treat schizophrenia in Singapore? At which he smiled at me and said, exactly in the same way you've just been teaching us. I don't treat schizophrenia in the schizophrenia ward in the Institute of Mental Health in North Singapore. I treat the other half of the patients, the part which is not schizophrenic. And I just did something a Buddhist monk is not supposed to do. I worshipped him. And I did that because I worshipped his wisdom. I know how effective that is. How difficult and almost how much suffering the disease of schizophrenia is. Not just for the person, but for family, friends, and others. And to see a person who's understood, got it. They are not schizophrenic. If you call a person schizophrenic, then you become schizophrenic. For what? There's more to it than that. Much more to it. Focus on the other part. The part which is not schizophrenic. That part grows. And it squashes out most of the other. Stigmatization. Class B. Bipolar. Stigmatizing. It's much more than that. So yes, meditation can help an insight changes the whole ballgame of mental illness. It's not supplanting all the other great advances in mental illness. It really pushes a lot of alternative therapies, which are incredibly powerful. So please excuse me for saying a lot about that, because that's really important. No such thing as a bipolar person. A person. Much bigger than that. There's no such thing as a criminal. There's people without crimes. Okay? My nephew, 17-year-old, was under medication for depression. Do you think meditation can help him? Absolutely. I used to have keep all these letters and emails which people sent to me. Thank you so much, Ajahn Brahm, for your teachings. I'm now overcome depression. Thank you so much. I was suicidal, now I'm not. Thank you. But you're spilling out my cupboard. So one has not come let go, just throw all this. I've heard them. And now I'm collecting new ones. Heaps of them. Because it actually works. Even just my little book, Open the Door of Your Heart, that has healed so many depressions. I think I mentioned that in the talk, the fundraising dinner. It was some of the most moving moments of my life. This was in my monastery over in Perth. This woman came, she's obviously European, maybe about 50 years of age. She came, and as soon as she saw me, she said, do I jump around? I said, yes. And she just smiled and started crying. And I said, what's going on? And she said, I've just arrived, I think this morning, from Bern, Switzerland. I've come straight from the airport, straight to the small street to see you. And after I've seen you, I'm going back this evening, all the way back to Switzerland. I've just come here. All that way just to see him. Why? And then she got out her copy of Open the Door of Your Heart. Not like any copy I've seen, this was so well used. You know, the cover was all bent and dog-eared. And the thing was all just bent so many times. And that's when she said, I had depression, anxiety disorder, cancer, I was dying. No one could help me. Doctors, some psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists. This was in Switzerland, wealthy country. So someone suggested your book. I read it, read it, read it, read it. Now, full remission from cancer. Psychologists, psychiatrists said, no more schizophrenia, no anxiety disorder. I'm healthy, just like an older person. I've come here. So please, come and sign my book. She wanted to come and say thank you personally. When I signed her book, she went. You're like, thank you for seeing someone who's saved your life, really, big time. That's why she came all that way to Toronto. This stuff works. Says you're wrong, out of medication, medication, you think medication, meditation, therapy? Absolutely. Not just the meditation, but the Dharma as well. Makes you see in a totally different way. Many young people, middle-aged people, everybody has actually overcome things like depression through meditation and through sort of things like the Dharma. But it has to be the right type of meditation. Okay, I'm really getting into this now. Please don't send it through power retreats. That just makes it so hard, so fierce, they get worse. They usually crack in the mental, it always gets worse. The kind, soft, gentle. The last thing they need is force. This force which has injured them so much. The kindness, the gentleness. The teddy bears. Brilliant therapy. Teddy bear. It works on something safe to come with me and to experience some kindness and safety and peace. Totally unthreatening. That's marvelous, depression. And for ill will, feeling down with life, and you won't take that. So, this actually is how this type of meditation, calm, gentle, peaceful. I'm really sort of so disappointed how some Buddhists are so harsh on themselves and harsh on others. Sit up straight! Come on, sit up straight, 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 straight. How does that feel? You know, nice and gentle, this is, the contrast is just so obvious that that is dangerous. That's harsh. And it doesn't help. So encourage people, you don't need to shout quickly, encourage them. Just inspire them. You get much more out. My monks, there are so many monks in monastery, they work so hard, they don't shout at them, don't use the stick. Inspire them. When you inspire them, they do so much more. For their fundraiser, inspire people, get much more money for you. Honestly, shout at them, you're going to go to hell if you don't give a donation. Hell! The last person who ever gave a donation, they went to and they got hit by a car on the way home. The last person who didn't be kind to us, they got cancer the next day. Be careful! That fear, that's not how to treat people. Inspire them, be kind to them. It's amazing. Just how people rise up to the occasion of inspiration. And of course. So yeah, this is, it works. And if you can't get a good teacher, YouTube, the books, that YouTube channel is done. Actually, this is YouTube, it's actually done by Google. That has made a lot of good content. That's why it's so wealthy. YouTube, Google. Because they've all watched all the time. They're making such good content, YouTube. Today, when I did mental meditation, I felt some sensations in my chest, and after some time, I started to tear, to cry. Excellent. But already a couple of you come up and said, I started crying and I got sort of embarrassed and I stopped. Oh, come on. Crying is normal. Men cry, monks cry. Inspiration. Whenever I go to India, there's two places I can't resist it. The first place is the Lotus Peak. Oh, that's just, that gets me every time. That's the Buddha, it's real, it's that. It's real, that's, it's sitting there, and the Buddha's that, right where your family is, that's where the Buddha's. I can't call Bosch, what is it? And that gets me, it's fire. This is the energy, pushes up and just water comes out. The other place is in the beautiful Dharmachakra Buddha statue in the museum in Sanaa. Ah, oh, that's just, to me that's one of the most beautiful pieces of artwork in the world. It just captures, for me, the peace, power, and the gentleness of the Buddha. Oh, that's amazing. And I think, I've seen it often, obviously, on photos and pictures. Well, the first time I went there on Pilgrimage, I made a beeline for them. Yeah, anyone else was walking around the students in the park. And I said, can I go to the museum? So I went in there. But there was no guidebooks, there's no maps. You could ask anybody, where's the Buddha statue? Well, you know where it was. So I was wandering around, lost, looking for it. And I turned the corner, and there it was. At the end of the corridor. It's the bloody way. The next time I went there, I was taking a group. I said, let's come and see the Buddha statue. This time, I was prepared. Crying. Because it really got inspired me. And the third time I went there, I went, I'm not going to resist it, I'm just going to indulge it. Because it's happy, beautiful, inspired. And I went there, just with the tissues at the ready. I went turned the corner. It was covered with a cloth. Because there was a workman painting the ceiling above. Oh, you know, expectations. I should have known better. I was really sort of, you know, one of the highlights, and all that way, and I was expecting it stupid, and I was so disappointed. And then, without anyone asking the workman, you just took the cloth off. Oh, that was so wonderful, because it was just the seed of my disappointment. And now I never expected it, and it just came. Because it uncovered it. It's alright, cry, inspiration. And other times, it's quite rare these days that, you know, I hear another monkey talk. Every now and again, you hear some monk or a monkey talk. Oh, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful. It is kind. And I don't stop them at all. I'm not embarrassed. Because I know that's called tears. It's a type of pity. It's a type of joy which comes from the inspiration, which is part of the life. It's what's supposed to happen. Becoming enlightened is not like becoming a robot. Maybe Japan with no direction. Real enlightened people have lost all the negative emotions. No fear, no anger, no anxiety. All those negative emotions, they've gone. Positive ones. Inspiration, joy, kindness. They're all there in abundance. Which is why it's actually quite encouraging for me as a young man. Because I never wanted to be like a robot. Even my thing was just having no feelings at all and stuff. Don't be one now. It's having this beautiful kindness and gentleness and peace. All the positive emotions. So that's why it's okay to cry. It is a really good thing. You see anyone else cry, go to them and say, oh, what's wrong with you? No, it's not right with you. He's so jealous, they're enjoying themselves. Just leave a few tissues next to them. So that when they come out of the day, that's nice. That's a beautiful thing to do. Allow them to encourage. So don't suppress it, for goodness sake. So, those questions. So, the prayer meditation, yeah, sensation suggests that tears come next. But I don't feel sad. Is it normal? It's not normal, it's better than normal. Yeah. How do I know whether I'm doing prayer meditation correctly? That was correct. You get great joy and happiness. It just happens, it's normal, natural. It's called tears of joy. Wow. One of the great Pali sayings. Just two words. Very easy to remember. Aho Sukha. Aho Sukha. It means, oh what joy. Oh what joy. Because the Buddha was passing this one, he just came out from meditation. And he was saying, Aho Sukha. Aho Sukha. And the monk said, he's in Calgary. He said, no, he's just come out of my meditation. He didn't say that. The Buddha was not And so that's a very wonderful word for my monk. So we've never had a really nice meditation. Oh, holds the hopes of man. Oh, what bliss. So hopefully, as you'll say, there are many times you've read this book. Come out of meditation, and you must cry. Oh, what bliss. Oh. Next question. Are these fears and discomfort due to my belly? My belly fat during meditation. I don't fear of any discomfort. No, it's not normal. Since I've been obsessed with self-judgmental thoughts. Oh, look. All the happy people. You can see up the top there in the lobby area, the fat Buddha. That is really fast. I've got a long way to go. And young Chuck, really fat. My preceptor, the Sangha Buddha Jara, what's it called? Really fat. Fat and happy and so kind. The thin people. They are very, very cute children. See? Actually, fun. It's getting better. But thin people are usually the miserable, dangerous ones. Some fat people walk. So about the fat and body image concerns. I now suppose to practice kindness and acceptance to any part of my experience. But I'm really, really, something big with this. Does anyone have any advice on how to cover these obsessions, self-judgmental thoughts? Oh, this is more like kindness. And just, you know, that's one of the reasons. Well, I know that some people say, that's a problem, you know, it's great. You know, just a big example to work. They say, no, I am a good example of but being me being fat, it doesn't make other people feel so guilty. That's my act of compassion. Now, sometimes, look, I don't eat that much. You know, you've seen how much I eat. It's not that much. It's just my problem is I don't worry enough. Actually, if you worry a lot, you lose weight. Which is so peaceful, so calm. My metabolism is so low. So I don't learn that much. It's too peaceful, too calm. You are access and really upset. You eat a great thing and have a little eating after this and have a little that. Then you learn a lot of that. So, if I need to lose weight, I need to have more bodies in my life. This time I've got a wife. That's why I've got a wife. Much more peaceful existence. What is that old joke? Why do married men die before married women? Because they want to. So yeah, practice kindness to yourself. Think that's okay. It has advantages. My advantage is I don't need meditation cushions. I've got my own. My also, I tell people, isn't that my trick? I don't fall on my face. I fall on this body back here. I bounce my back up. That's how to deal with it, does it joy? What is the positive of people's practice? Like, yes, that was yesterday. So, full moon and new moon, those are the positive days, we still practice that. So, because I was away from my center, I just did a little ceremony like yesterday morning. The impossible days. Just every fortnight, so the monks have to come together, and the nuns as well. We should just calm their thoughts for the day. So yeah, we still do that. It's just a fortnightly ceremony. John Brown, as I understand it, we are trying to condition our minds to be peaceful, joyful, and happy. Do we reach people else of jhanas? Our jhanas condition mental state? Yes, every mental state is conditioned, it's caused, and it's caused by the absence of many things. And if it's caused by the absence of many things, it's much more stable. Things which are caused by the presence of things like wealth, good health, a nice job, then that is much more unstable than things which are caused by absences, things disappearing. That's why the jhanas, they are conditioned, but they are far more stable, far more closer to enlightenment. Here's what happens when jhanas are conditioned, mental states in nirvana, which is unconditioned. Okay, nirvana is where everything vanishes. Jhanas, most things are gone. There's still a few more things left, such as your mind, consciousness. That's still left in the jhanas. And in the immaterial jhanas, which come after the fourth jhana, that's when you literally lose your mind. Be the final big loser. In the West, they say losing your mind, they say, you're crazy. No, you're crazy now. And so you lose your mind, and then you're safe. One cannot be unnirvana just as one can must exit from the forest. No, I think must exit. Actually, Dhammabuddha. And he's not in a type of just Tibor, that's right, Tibor. And he was narcissist and said this, and I thought he was actually accurate, he was onto something. He said that in the Kalyana Sutta, the Buddha, on his deathbed, Kalyana bed, he went to the jhanas, and from fourth jhana, that's where he entered Kalyana. That's where he stopped and ceased, from the fourth jhana state. And Bill Dhammabuddha was suggesting to me, we know that's how the Buddha, how nirvana ceased, stopped. He's had the same for every human being. I've never heard that before. I was like, yeah, actually, he also something. That is how nirvana happens. Entry the fourth jhana, and you cease from there. That's the the dropping off place. It is the departure now. It is the airport where you leave for the time. Interesting. So you exit from the fourth jhana and come back again. Great place to leave from. Anyway, next question. Can the derivative arises from meditation be taken as the main object of meditation? Exactly. It says what you used to. Exactly. With other physical phenomena such as breathing, or experience, or slightly judging the teeth, judging straining of the spine, and so on, there you go. Yes, in fact, that delight, that becomes the object you're really watching in stage 5, 6, 7, and 8. About another setting. You're watching a delight. That's why the Anapanasati Sutta, when it links this with Satipatthana, so this is the second Satipatthana, contemplating Vedana, by experiencing the beauty of the original life with the breath. Yes, you're watching the breath. Just like you may watch a piece of paper, but you can actually be perceiving its size, its shape, its color. You're watching the breath, but you're perceiving the main object is the light in the breath. That is essential for sleep. No delight, wow. That's only the beginning of great delight. It grows from there. And of course, the delight, the bliss, is the center of the jhanas. There are such amazing things to understand and realize and experience. This Buddhism, this meditation, is a part of happiness. Happiness upon happiness. Increasing every time. That is such an attractive way to describe this part, and so accurate. If you wonder, where the sutras didn't say that, it's a mind-in-mind sutra, the second. the fruits of the holy life. This on this promise. Adam Brown, I would differentiate whether I was meditating or speaking when I was meditating this afternoon, but at least I was trying to do my explanation on how to know if meditation is or just pure sleeping. Ask the people next to you whether you're snoring. There's always people snoring in the circle. If it was snoring, it wasn't junk. You do not snore. And anyway, it doesn't really matter. Just keep being peaceful, more peaceful. As you become more aware, then instead of going to sleep when you're peaceful, not aware you're peaceful, when you wake up, you're peaceful and you can enjoy it fully. So that's, if this happens after one sleepiness vanishes, disappears. So don't worry about that. When people are sleeping, I said that's not a big influence. Restlessness and thinking are not his influence. So if you're sleeping, I'm making progress. If you're still thinking, you're always coming. How does one channel the energy from walking and sitting meditation to the mind in peace and throughout meditation? It's when you do that, it's when they go to the body as soon as possible. So even when you're washing the breath, don't wash it at the body. You're not washing the nose, you're washing the breath. So you don't know where the breath is located. You don't know that you're washing a particular nose or the belly. All you know is it's the breath. So your awareness of the body is being left behind as soon as possible. So you don't know what the feet are doing, you don't know what the hands are doing, you don't know where the breath is located, it's just breath going in and going out. And then when energy comes, you know, you cut the link to the body. You can't flow into the body, because all you've got is the awareness of your mind. It just flows into your mind, you get very bright images. If it flows into the body, you get these thrilling sensations through your body, sometimes shaking, and you know, there's kundalini. That's all energy which really should go into the mind, falling into your body. It's okay, but it's actually the wrong type of energy in the wrong place. It's not dangerous, it's just a bit discomforting. It's much better to let go of the body as soon as possible. And then, yeah, place the energy can go into the mind. Where it belongs. When did those guidance to meditate, it's very awesome, I could feel very relaxed and calm. When I try it again, I feel lost. Please tomorrow 2 PM guidance again. Why don't I guide you at 6 o'clock in the morning and 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock? I can do that for you. I can guide you at any time of the day and night. All you need to do is to download the recordings and play it on your iPhone. And wherever you are in the world, even on the toilet, you can hear the earbuds. And you listen to our Dharma. And I don't mind. People ask me that question. They say, okay, you listen to the Dharma on the toilet. And I said, anywhere. It's so important to listen to this stuff that I don't care where you listen to it. You have my permission. Sometimes you're in the hospital bed. You're really sick. Don't know what to do. This is Dharma. One of the great things, mobile phones really suck because they're always going off in the middle of the meditation. Always happens. I can say, imagine that happened when the Buddha was under the road and he had mobile phones. You would have a Buddha as well. So that I say, a mobile phone does go off in the meditation hall. The phone makes bad hum. In its next incarnation, your phone will be recalled as a police speed camera, or as a parking meter. Those are the two of the lowest forms of technology. So that's the current result of your phone coming off, being more than parking meter. Anyway, nothing to do is actually download those ones. Because when you've got some nice instructions from someone you trust, they're nice and soft voice, it's easy to listen to. You can listen to it on your iPhone, and it guides you. Until it comes to the time that it's exactly what I'm going to say, what I'm going to say, which means you got brainwashed. It's already been conditioned, so then you don't need the iPhone. it just happens because you trained. Being an object is far more than if you want. How important is it to maintain a good posture during meditation? Look at me. I'm comfortable like this. And I did this also on purpose to say, look, all this having good posture is you have to sit like this, you have to sit like that. No. You sit how you are comfortable. Pointing your feet out to the Buddha. Yes, please do so. People have been pointing the feet out of the Buddha and saying, yes, yes, yes. And the Buddha, I've never seen once the Buddha complain. If you're comfortable, please do it. When the body relaxes, it takes a slap of its foot, and then we'll just make our mind keep it so nobody keeps it at all. So don't do anything. But what you find what happens, which is one of them to observe, that you're slouching, leaning forward, and then the mind just starts to pick up. What was strange about that? The first time that happened to me, I never did that. I didn't. It did it by itself. Your body will move to actually to straighten itself up if it wants to. So you just let it happen. That's the job. Don't be a driver. It's wonderful actually to see just how autonomous your body is. Your body knows how to breathe. You don't tell your body how to breathe. Or how to pump the heart. That's automatic. Sends it straight to itself up automatically if it needs to. I realize that all the thoughts of what I want to do during my meditation, those what to do thoughts are likely as resolution to those guilts and unpleasant experiences. After those resolutions, I can meditate better. Making resolutions, letting go of something in the same time, or wanting something, resolutions become better, thank you, Raja. It's okay to make a resolution, but only once. How do you make a resolution? Shut up. An example. Suppose that when you leave here, you're going to the, say, to the airport. So you get a taxi. And you go to the taxi in the front of him and say, please take me to Subang Airport. I want to go to Subang Airport. You get in the taxi and say, Subang Airport, okay, don't forget, and please don't drive too fast, don't drive too slow. I look after the traffic, I'm a Buddhist lady, when I let people in, that's marvelous with karma, I don't want to be embarrassed, and make sure you get there by a specific time, and this is the best way, don't go on the E8 or E1, go on this other way, it's a much better way to go. And even before you've left the lobby, the taxi, get out! I know how to drive, you can sit in the back and shut up. Now you know what that simile means. There you are, you sit down, okay fine, take me to Jarvis, and take me this way, don't take it that way, because I get upset. You want to wash the body first of all, and if you come up, make sure you don't go looking for a better cup to you. No wonder your mind rebels and says, get out. So if you do do resolutions, they're simple ones. You go up, if I was doing that, I'd go up, the taxi said, hey, you just sit back, try it, please. And I'd shut up, didn't he? Taxi drives in, I have to go there. If they go the wrong way, they don't really mind. So I let them go there, they just say, right, command meditation, horse works. So, don't be too many instructions. That's all. Ajahn Brahm, you have mentioned about the danger of empathy. I am a counselor working with clients on their life issues. Same as me. I am aware that transfer of negative energy from clients and will use my best positive energy to empower them until they feel tired at times. What would you advise? Should I quit after one or two more years? What are some tips on self-care better? Ajahn taught me cuisine. You know, all monks will be counselors, and people come in really difficult problems. Suicide, what a break up in marriage, wanting to, I don't know what else they wanted to do, but really bad things. And all of their life is in your hands. The responsibility of a family, finances, everything, even sometimes presidents, even the vice, what to do. So, I always remember that Gentile simile. We as a counselor, you have to imagine that you are a dusty, a trash can. And I sit there and people tell me all the problems about the marriage, the business, the economy, and I don't understand a word of it because I've never been married, I don't do business, I have no clue what economy means. But I listen with kindness, and they dump all this trash into me. And afterwards, oh, wonderful, thank you so much. And I don't mean too much. I just say, very good, yeah, carry on. And afterwards, I just try to say, remember to be a trash can with a hole in the bottom. You don't keep anything. You allow it to go right through you. All these incredible tragedies and problems people have. You listen, but at the end of the session, you keep nothing. So an empty trash can, so the next time a person comes in, you're not too full to listen to them and care for them. You empty out. You keep nothing. Trouble is with empathy, people keep it. They keep the problems. They dream about them, they talk about them with their family, and they keep thinking about it endlessly, obsessed by their thoughts, which is why it really destroys them. If you learn how to meditate, learn how to let go, you can be such an incredible counselor. Always empty and free and light and calm to the next person. The last person is gone. You keep nothing. Second try. So be trusting. Should we meditate to let go? No, we should let go. And the meditation happens. Or should we meditate to contemplate? You can't contemplate without letting go. Contemplate the mind and body, it's no self, and you should look at as how to. Or depend on God. Now just meditate, keep it simple, just to let it go. Actually, there is a Buddhist joke. A Buddhist joke. Anatta, dukkha, anatta, walk into a bar. Because you know, this is, you know, most jokes say, this person, that person, that person, Donald Trump, Obama, and, I don't know, sort of, King John, they're walking to a bar. That's how jokes start. So, Anatta, Dukkha, Anatta, walk into a bar. And Dukkha speaks to us, says, this bar is terrible. And Anatta says, don't worry, it will change. And Anatta says, who said that? Who said that? A real Buddhist joke. So, you meditate to be, not to do. Meditate to be, not to get somewhere. Okay? So, we always want to go somewhere, improve, do something, achieve something, have a new experience. Forget about all that. We meditate to stop, just to be. Be where we are, set current places. Not to change ourselves, but understand who we really are. We don't need to change. Let it take to be, not to do. Is noble silence important? If it is important, why is it not maintained? Especially during meal times. But after meal is done, people start talking to one another. It would affect someone who would like to maintain noble silence. Can we practice kindness by practicing noble silence? If people are talking at meal time, you want to practice noble silence, then don't have a meal. The reason why people fall is because it's their custom, it's a habit. It's so hard actually to stop talking. So it's difficult to try and get the other silence again, especially if I want to be kind and gentle with you. So please, out of respect for other people, please try and keep it quiet in the meantime. Take us to lunch afterwards. And what's Thursday, Friday, Saturday? I've only got 2 days of quiet. And on Sunday, you talk about my situation. Then I come along, well, when watching the breath, should we put the mind at the breath to put the nose on your walk up and put the mind at the head? And I still feel the breathing, so I went, it doesn't matter where you feel the breathing, as long as you know the breath where you're going out. When I teach people in Australia how to do the breath meditation, it's so simple, I just say, close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times, get to the end of the third breath, open your eyes. Little kids, 7 years of age, do that. Then I ask, how did you know? You're breathing in, I don't tell them where to watch. They do it naturally. They just watch the breath. After 2 minutes, they open their eyes. And I say, okay, now close your eyes again and watch 3,000 breaths. You know what I'm talking about. So, all you're really doing is you're being aware of the breath. Whatever it is, which tells you what that's doing. Whatever feeling sensation is, don't need to pain it, not hate it. Just know it. Keep it simple. That is the best. Hi, Ajahn, be well and happy. No, I do not follow orders from anybody. I am independent. That's why I didn't get married. Why, say? Darling, do this and do that. Someone is telling me to be well and be happy. No, I demand my right to be sick and grumpy. It's not against the precepts, it's not against the postcode rules. Once you're allowed to be grumpy and sick. So you try to force me to be well, no. Loving kindness is not saying people may be well. If you're grumpy, I allow you to be grumpy. The door of my heart is open to you, even if you're sick. Imagine going to see a loved one in hospital. So I hope you get well soon. That puts pressure on them. So I hope you get well soon. If it happens, if it doesn't, hope you enjoy being sick. Be real. So there's no pressure on them. You're not stigmatizing sickness and trying to get rid of it at all costs. You're caring for the person, not trying to cure the sickness. So there's, just maybe happy and well if you want to. You don't have to. I still love being the original sick. I don't want to be sick. I love life. So enjoy it. Shame is the way you look at these things. Instead of telling, may you be happy, may you be well, may you get better. You've been in the hospital a few weeks and it's cost you a lot of money. Get better soon. I can't waste my time coming to visit you every day. My question is, I find it difficult to read the Buddhist scriptures. They seem more repetitious and boring. How should I go about it? Thank you for your answer. Help is on the way! And a few other people have noticed that. So instead of just complaining about it, we do something. So, I have got Ajahn Brahms, give you the translation of many of the core sutras. To make them one language, take out all the repetition and all the meaningless stuff, which doesn't really affect us in this. When you pair that into the heart, it's way more powerful. And you don't have to read about chariots. And you don't have to, what is one of the Sydney's I checked? Well, that's right, it was like an allegory. And they said, imagine a Benares cloth, and it goes to the washers, and they put it in the stream, and they beat it, and they hammer it, and then they wash it with lye or cow dung. and then they dry it and they put it in a scented casket so the smell of the cow dung disappears. And then even afterwards there's still a remaining scent of the cow. Now straight away you think, what on earth are you doing washing clothes in cow dung? The whole emphasis of the simile goes to something else. So I change the simile. Suppose you know you've got a pair of trousers and you put it in the washing machine. When it comes out, it's still got the smell of the soap powder. So you put it on the line to dry and see the soap powder smell gross. Same stimuli, but modernized. This is an undergarment. Here they see no self. They clear all those defilements, but just the scent, the fragrance of the defilements still lingers. Like the smell of on your shirts of the soap powder once it's come out of the washing machine. Or the dryer. Now that's something you can relate to. Now changing the simile to something more meaningful is far, far more helpful. It really can come much better. So I'm trying to get that published. You can find it on the internet and get a pirated copy. Something like that. So I totally agree with you. It's such good stuff that it doesn't even feel good translation. The translation is not word for word, not for scholars, for ordinary people, the heart of it, all the rubbish out of the way, so you can actually see. Did Buddha say the mind is everything, what you think you become? Close. The mind is a forerunner of all things. Just like the cart follows the hoof of the ox. The very close. Imagine Buddha never said that because he couldn't speak English. Of course. Then add number one. The four ways of attaining enlightenment according to the Nikaya. This is in Yakutra. Samatha and Vipassana. Vipassana and Samatha. Vipassana and Samatha together. Question, question, question. Patrick, can you please elaborate on the fourth way? This is the way, this is Ananda. So this is the four, when people come and say to the Buddha they've been invited, it's one of these four ways. It's Samatha, Vipassana, that's Samatha is in the front, Vipassana is in the back, Vipassana and then Samatha, Vipassana is in the front, Samatha is right behind, Vipassana and Samatha together, until the path becomes clear. That is until you get under the mist, so you can actually see everything streaming. This is the path becoming a stream. And then you make much of that path, you develop the path, the eightfold path, until you're fully enlightened. In this sutta, there's four ways, and the four ways to slow the path, the stream. And then they all come together, eightfold path. Now the fourth way is you get so inspired, maybe by this interpretation of the Buddha, and the fighting of sutra. Because inspiration, joy. And then you start to see the Dhamma. So, it's a bit of luck, inspiration, five frequencies, just vanishing for a little while. You can see. How can meditation improve sports performance? Novak Djokovic. Wimbledon, not this year, the year before, he has to be winning because he stopped doing this. He would go to the Thai temple in Wimbledon, in Kalong Road, which was literally around the corner from the morning of the temple. He would go there every morning. The March Union, they wouldn't sort of interfere with him, was then going to the extensive gardens, so he could meditate before the matches. He'd always been there. He became a champion. He doesn't do that anymore. That's why he's lost number one. This is 2000 Olympic Games. It's a marvelous story. I remember reading this, I just can't get the details right. It was painted in Sydney Morning Herald after the Olympic Games in Sydney. The New South Wales government, who were paying for the Olympic Games, hosting it, with the support of the federal government, they arranged in the Olympic Village in Homebush Bay for members of all the different faiths, leaders, to give spiritual support to people from around the world, no matter what their religion was. So they have what good is luck, was in the village at all times. Allowed to go in there, I think it's probably given some money, which they were from the government for being there. So if any Buddhist there, they can go to the market, get some chance or whatever. But just to give them some support, some encouragement. So he wrote in the Sydney Morning Herald that one day, a Russian athlete came to see him, dragged to him by her two parents. And her parents were very concerned for their daughter. The reason was, I think she was 800 meters sprint. That he was tracking it. There were high profile in it. And she had managed to get to the final. And in a few days' time, she would be performing 800 meters sprint in front of the whole world, especially her country people back in Russia, or friends or loved ones, would be glued to the TV set. This was 800 meters final. And if ever you've been scared, anxious, let's say an examination or a driving test, that's nothing compared to the big stage of the Olympic Games. She was so anxious on a plane, she wasn't sleeping at night, and she couldn't even train properly. And her parents tried to find a psychologist, nothing was working, even though they weren't Buddhists. At least they knew that Buddhism was an expert on meditation. We invented it. We just forgot to take out the patent. So, we're the experts, and so there was a monk in the village, so they dragged her daughter to see the monk and begged the monk, please teach our girls some meditation. In a couple of days' time, she's going to be facing 800 meters Olympic game final. Please help her. She's not sleeping, she can't train. So the monk just gave her some meditation instructions. Very simple stuff. See, this is intended because this was important. She wasn't thinking about anything else. You're going to be running 800 meters final Olympic games, that's all you're going to think about. So, a few days later, he didn't watch the TV, he didn't know what happened. Until he saw the family walking towards him. How do you describe it? It's very articulate. He said, oh, I saw these three people walking towards me. The athlete in the middle, the parents on either side, mum and dad on either side. And I recognized him, oh, it's his family. And as I approached him a bit closer, he noticed they were smiling. They're happy. Oh, something good must have happened. And then he noticed, as they came closer, that he was watching from a distance, things were getting clearer and clearer. He noticed, how he put it, the athlete in the middle was swinging something on the end of the string. What do you think that it was? A medal. And it's only when he came over to me closer, he saw the car was gold. And they came up to him and said, thank you. Thank you so much for teaching our daughter how to relax. She didn't sort of achieve her potential. She went way beyond expectations, other than the cold. Now, why can't you send a Buddhist monk to, where's the next living house? Japan. That's not that far. So actually to teach your Olympic team how to meditate. You get so many more medals from Malaysia and Singapore. The evidence is there. Show it to your government. Get some monks to go over there. Or monks. Or meditation teachers. Someone that these people have to meditate. It really helps. Yeah, yeah. When having trouble with saliva getting them out, try to meditate. Could you please recommend a solution?
Yes.
It's you walk past the dentist. You get one of those machines. Put it in the oven. Don't get one of those. That's not the problem. Just wow. Just went there after we guided meditation, when we reached the perception, we reached the center of self-breathing. I realized I could no longer feel my hands and legs. I could hear your voice and felt some discomfort somewhere. What was it mean? What was it promise? This is a being that's not supposed to have a well done. After a while, rest it when he disappears. Oh, good riddance. There's always a niche or a cough somewhere, a headache, an ache. But then the whole body goes, wow, it's so free. So it's working, well done. It's what's supposed to happen. Things are supposed to disappear. Dear Ajahn, do you believe in Santa? Yes, I do. I believe in Santa Muni. That's another word for the Buddha. That's one of the Buddha's evidence. Santa Muni is silent. So Santa Muni, he is the best of all Santas. Yes, Santa Claus, why not? He's always kind and generous, and I really respect Santa Claus for two reasons. Actually, three reasons. He's generous, he's fat, and he's happy. And he knows how to speak to Hokkien. Very good. He's Chinese, not the Norway. Okay, that was perfect. Ajahn, have you done any Buddhist practice and meditation? Here I get in trouble again. The Buddha never taught Anicca. It's so obvious. Many monks are too afraid to say so because they get in trouble. One, or so many pieces of evidence for this, at the first council, this is when Ananda, which is Ananda men that got invited and came to the keyhole. And they all met together. Their entry tradition, not just Theravada, but the other traditions say the same, that first of all, Rupali, he was an arahant, he recited the Vinaya, the rules of Vinaya. And afterwards, Ananda recited the Pancha Nikaya, the five Nikayas. And we all know even today, that's the thing, five Nikayas, Diga Nikaya, Ajahn Nikaya, Samyutta Nikaya, and Dhruva Nikaya, and Kudaka Nikaya. So the prominent by its absence is any mention at all of Abhidhamma. Not mentioned at all. It was not charged in the first council. It wasn't there. It came much later. So, the evidence, if anyone is going to be rational, logical, depend upon evidence, very clear archaeological, a very clear linguistic evidence. For example, if you read a book, say Chaucer, read a book by by Shakespeare, Charles Dickens, and Harry Potter. You read those four books, Chaucer, Shakespeare, Charles Dickens, and Harry Potter. You will know which one was early, which one was late. The language changes. Vocabulary changes. So much so that you can compare with other books written at the same time as you know of it at that time. And you can really date when that text was written. That is called linguistic analysis. Developed on the Christian Bible. Try and date when those parts of the Bible were actually written. It's a very exact science. If you do that on the Abhidhamma, 100 years, 200 years after the time of the Buddha. That's the language there. They did not use such language in the time of the Buddha. It's later. However, When I say that, it's a bad one, bad one. Because it says in the Abhidhamma, anyone who says the Abhidhamma is not true will go to hell. Just like it says in the Bible, if you don't believe in the Bible, you go to hell. It says in those books, it doesn't say anywhere else. It's just like those chain emails you might get. If you don't send this email on, you will lose all your wealth, you'll have an accident, you'll get sick. It's using fear instead of common sense. So Abhidhamma is not spoken by the Buddha. Lots of evidence. At least. Theater. I'm a novice meditator. During the guided meditation yesterday, I was washing my breath and there was a short period of time I felt I had disappeared. Another loser. Exactly. What I came to was the end of the hour. After coming out of meditation, I did not feel any different. Was I speaking or was I meditating? I feel I was aware of the entire time. Yeah, you probably were aware. This is just starting. After all, you get more and more energy, more and more light, more and more happiness. It's more and more and more. You're just starting. So welcome, so far. Okay, last question. 30 past 10, almost. Dear Ajahn, I'd like to thank the BGF for giving us the book by Shereshaw, The Jatakas, First Voice of the Bodhisattva. The book has given me a new insight into Jatakas and how important stories are in relation to the perfection of our needs. Meditation and Jatakas images are mentioned frequently in the stories. Thank you. That's a nice accolade for the BGF. So, what does BGF mean? It means the best, greatest, family in Malaysia. BGF. Is that right? The best, greatest family. I love it. That's the most important shit. But you know, can't change it around. Very good. Okay, so that's enough for this evening. There is still some more to come tomorrow. But if you keep asking so many more questions, we'll never be allowed to go home. Saturday we have to stay here. Sunday we're not going home until we finish all the questions. So you may have to cancel your trips and car trips and something. Is that a good idea? Yeah. Okay, but anyway, come up like so many questions. I think I made a problem. I need to answer some more questions. Please, I wait for them, patience, and be ready. Here it comes. Sadhu. Sadhu. Okay, have a wonderful